Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
Oh, that's right. You got Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. And this week you may have noticed a difference. You didn't hear the rock cracking like you usually do at the beginning of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. And that's because we're doing our final salute to President George H.W. Bush, who passed away last week. And he had a funeral, a state funeral. And we're going to talk some about President Bush's life. That's President George H.W. Bush. And we're going to play some clips from the funeral, and some we'll have some of his humor. And I just want to say that it was good to see America come together to say goodbye to a former commander-in-chief. And what the press was praising him for, well, they didn't do that when he was in office. That's for sure. But we will get in some talks about that, and we will play some clips from the funeral. But I do want to say that this show, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, we do want to take the time to look at the good things that President George H.W. Bush did as president, even before he's president. You know, he had quite a resume before he was elected president of the United States, the 41st president of the United States. And now, as we remember his life, there's some things you may not have known. And, you know, during the funeral, we found out some things. And I'm going to talk about, there's a veteran that I've recently talked to, flew air missions in World War II. And you get flack. You hear people talk about being in planes and the flak, having to go through flak, and you don't realize what that is unless your life is in danger in the air and wondering what's going to happen. Well, we're going to play a clip right there of actually it was John Meacham, who was President Bush's biographer, and he was talking about when President Bush, and I think most people who were around when he ran for president, you've seen they actually had a photograph of a submarine that picked him up there after he was shot down, but you don't really know the whole story. Take a listen to his biographer, John Meacham, who spoke these words at the funeral last week.
The story was almost over even before it had fully begun. Shortly after dawn on Saturday, September 2nd, 1944, Lieutenant Junior Grade George Herbert Walker Bush, joined by two crewmates, took off from the USS San Jacinto to attack a radio tower on Chichijima. As they approached the target, the air was heavy with flak. The plane was hit. Smoke filled the cockpit. Flames raced across the wings. My God, Lieutenant Bush thought, this thing's gonna go down. Yet he kept the plane in its 35-degree dive, dropped his bombs, and then roared off out to sea, telling his crewmates to hit the silk. Following protocol, Lieutenant Bush turned the plane so they could bail out. Only then did Bush parachute from the cockpit. The wind propelled him backward, and he gashed his head on the tail of the plane as he flew through the sky. He plunged deep into the ocean, bobbed to the surface, and flopped onto a tiny raft. His head bleeding, his eyes burning, his mouth and throat raw from salt water. The future 41st President of the United States was alone. Sensing that his men had not made it, he was overcome. He felt the weight of responsibility as a nearly physical burden. and he wept. Then, at 4 minutes shy of noon, a submarine emerged to rescue the downed pilot. George Herbert Walker Bush was safe. The story, his story, and ours, would go on by God's grace. Through the ensuing decades, President Bush would frequently ask, nearly daily, he'd ask himself, why me? Why was I spared? And in a sense, the rest of his life was a perennial effort to prove himself worthy of his salvation on that distant morning. To him, his life was no longer his own. There were always more missions to undertake, more lives to touch, and more love to give. And what a headlong race he made of it all. He never slowed down.
And as John Meacham said, he never slowed down throughout life. He built a business. His dad was a senator from Connecticut. And then George H.W. Bush went to Texas to be on his own, to build his own business, and got in the oil business. And then he ran for office, got beat, ran and got in the Congress, ran and got beat. But he made a name for himself. So he was he got different positions, and then eventually went to head the CIA, and he ran for president and got beat by Ronald Reagan. But he became Ronald Reagan's vice president. And then he won the presidency in 1988. And one person said he was the best one-term president. Why didn't he get a second term? Well, a lot of it's because of the people who were praising him. It was the press. Now, I remember when George H.W. Bush was running for re-election. And it seemed, you look back and say, why didn't he do this? Why didn't his team do that and this? But the biggest part he had to do was overcoming the press. You got to remember, it had been 12 years since a Democrat, Jimmy Carter, had been in office. 12 long years. And the Democrats were desperate, and they were not going to take anything for granted. They had Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton ran a tough, tough campaign. But the thing is, it was the press that just kept hammering at the Bushes, hammering at George H.W. Bush. And this was the man who had, a year before, helped engineer a world victory, first since the fall of communism in the Soviet Union. He put together an international force in a Desert Storm to gain back Kuwait, who had been taken over by Saddam Hussein in Iraq. So this, and a lot of people thought there was no way you can beat George H.W. Bush for re-election. But the economy had gone into a recession. And I remember the press hammered over and over how bad the economy was, the worst since the Depression. And yet, as the economic numbers started coming in for 1992, in the year of the election, the numbers were looking better and better. There was growth even in that quarter before the election, but the press hammered it so bad and said it was the worst since the Depression that they just neglected to give out the numbers, and it was doom and gloom. And that was just a part of the way the press hammered George H.W. Bush. They didn't want him reelected, and it was tough on Democrats at that time because they had, remember, it had been 12 years. Ronald Reagan, 8 years, 4 years of George H.W. Bush. And the Democrats were desperate to get into the White House and get the executive branch again. When you look back at that point in 1992, it had been only one Democrat who had won since 1964. 1964, Lyndon Johnson won. He had finished up Kennedy's term. He won in 1964, And that was the last time a Democrat had won, except for Jimmy Carter, 1976. So you look at that, 1964 to 1992, almost 30 years, and it had only been one win for the Democrat in the presidency. And people thought, well, the Democrats just can't win the presidency. So there was this in the liberal media. And at that time, there was no such thing as Fox News, no such thing as conservative radio was on the air. Rush Limbaugh's show was going nationwide. People were starting to learn who Rush was in a conservative voice, but he didn't have the big following, and it was in its infancy. And what was happening was the left-wing media blitz just pounded away at George H.W. Bush. And it was very fascinating to see how the press remembered him with such elegance and said, oh, those are the times when the Democrats and Republicans will work together. Basically, what they're saying is that was a Republican that we beat. And because we beat him, because we beat John McCain, these are the Republicans we like because they got beat by Democrats. That's you know, that may be mean to say, but it is the truth that every Republican that the Democrats like is a Republican who has been beaten or can be beat by the Democrats, by the liberal, by the left-wing extremist. And they went extreme on George H.W. Bush. And they, I remember Rush Limbaugh was talking about, and I remember the press came out, there was a picture of a scanner and Bush saying, what is that? And they were acting like, well, he didn't even know what a scanner is in a grocery store. And they knew it was bogus. He was, what they were talking about, I believe it was the CEO of the company that made the scanners, was talking about how it could, even if you had lost a receipt or something to reprint. And that's what they were talking about, this new technology. He knew what a scanner was, and yet they made him look like he's out of touch with the American people or did not know what a scanner was. They went on and on. That's just one example of a way they hated George H.W. Bush. They did not want him to win, and it was another campaign arm of the Clinton campaign, the press. And you noticed the press went right along with Clinton, just not as much. If Obama, it was nothing but soft pillows all the way, you know, with 8 years of Barack Obama. But I'm telling you that it was almost like, I can't believe what the press is saying about George H.W. Bush last week during the funeral, because this was the same press that hounded him out of office. And it went the same deal with his son. But I will say, as we are looking back over the life of President George H.W. Bush, he did do some things that put America into position, because we know what Ronald Reagan did. The Berlin Wall fell down under George H.W. Bush. That's when Eastern Europe had been communist for almost a generation. And so he got to oversee the dismantling of the Soviet Union. And I wish Bill Clinton had not won in 1992. And then we may have a whole different world than what we ended up with still a Cold War, a semi-Cold War going on with Vladimir Putin even now. So we could just wonder. But I am glad that President Bush was there to help engineer some of the unrolling. There was no violence. I won't say no violence. There was some violence, but for the most part, a peaceful transfer of power in Eastern Europe from the communist regimes into some democracy. So, and Germany came together from East Germany and West Germany. Amazing things happened on the world stage. Amazing things happened on the economic stage. And the one thing that really helped nail the coffin, because the press pushed it, was when George H.W. Bush in a Republican convention said, "Read my lips, no new taxes." And they pushed him to break that pledge. They wanted him to raise taxes, and then they reminded the whole world, the citizens around the country, that he broke his pledge. They knew that would break him down, and they ended up. And of course, if you remember, there was Ross Perot came in that race in 1992 and pulled a lot from the Republican or conservative side, so that Bill Clinton could win without a majority of the vote. So that, looking back, the press did their best to beat President George H.W. Bush in 1992, and I believe they succeeded in that, not for the betterment of America by any means. You would think they had fallen in love with George H.W. Bush, but only when he was no threat and they had proven that Bill Clinton could beat him. There's some humor. And there's some humor in at the funeral. It talked about George H.W. Bush's humor. So let me play this clip. It was Alan Simpson picked to come, a witty former senator from Wyoming, Republican. John Meacham, who we heard a while ago, he had some funny things to put in. James Baker, who was Secretary of State and did a lot all throughout, along with President George H.W. Bush. And then one of the grandkids, George P. Bush, and then George W. Bush, all on this clip. Let me run this clip for you, and then we're going to talk about some of the things that I can remember that he did that some people have forgotten about, but I do want to bring that up. But first, let's listen a little bit of them talk about the humor of George H.W. Bush. Here we go.
Known by all close to it, he loved a good joke, the richer the better, and he'd throw his head back and give that great laugh, but he never, ever could remember a punchline. And I mean never.
On the primary campaign trail in New Hampshire once, he grabbed the hand of a department store mannequin asking for votes. When he realized his mistake, he said, "Never know, gotta ask."
He would look at me and he said, "Baker, if you're so smart, why am I president and you're not?"
You can hear the voice, can't you? As Dana Carvey said, the key to a Bush 41 impersonation is Mr. Rogers trying to be John Wayne.
Always the competitor, each night, Gampy challenged all of the grandkids to the coveted First Asleep Award.
And he said, "Ah, I see the media is shooting you pretty full of holes." Actually, he said it a bit more pungently than that. And he said, "Why don't we go up to Camp David?" At that time, his popularity rating was 93%. Mine was 0.93. And so off we went. The media, of course, all gathered as we headed to Marine One. And George said, "Now wave to your pals over there in the media, Al." And they didn't wave back.
Fluency in English, President Bush once remarked, is something that I'm often not accused of. Looking ahead to the 88 election, he observed, "Inarguably, it's no exaggeration to say that the undecideds could go one way or the other."
In his 90s, he took great delight when his closest pal, James A. Baker, smuggled a bottle of Grey Goose vodka into his hospital room. Apparently it paired well with the steak Baker had delivered from Morton's.
All four of us were singing as we went back to the White House. "Don't cry for me, Argentina." And a few days later, he's getting hammered by the press for some extraordinarily petty bit of trivia. And suddenly he sings out, "Don't cry for me, Argentina." The press then wrote that he was finally losing his marbles.
He loved to laugh, especially at himself. He could tease and needle, but never out of malice. He placed great value on a good joke. That's why he chose Simpson to speak.
So the punchline for George Herbert Walker Bush is this. You would have wanted him on your side. He never lost his sense of humor. Humor is the universal solvent against the abrasive elements of life.
Now that clip was actually from the Washington Post on their put on YouTube. The Washington Post, again, they really, really went out of their way to when President Bush was in the White House to really cut him down and just hammer him. And so it was sort of funny to see them pick out this humor. But let me go on. I want to tell you about, to me, summing up the funeral and epitomizing what the respect that President George H.W. Bush demanded is there was a scene that was less than really a second, no more than a second or two, and that was when his body was lying in state in the Capitol, and former Senator Bob Dole of Kansas, 95 years old, George H.W. Bush was 94 when he passed away. Both fought in World War II. Of course, Bob Dole was permanently disabled. His right hand, the right arm, couldn't be used. Used his left hand. He's damaged, being able to walk. Couldn't really walk well. Now, of course, he's in a wheelchair, 95 years old. But he was wheeled up to the casket. Had the American flag draped casket, and as he's wheeled up, he had his aide to help him stand. And then as he stood, and he's not able to stand, but he mustered up the energy, and you need to go look at the videotape of this if you hadn't seen it. But for that brief second, he stood and he saluted. He said he hadn't planned to do it. It just came natural. As he stood, he saluted. And it meant so much in that moment that Bob Dole, who was a rival within the Republican Party of George H.W. Bush for years, decades, and Bob Dole, if you remember, he was running mate with Gerald Ford when Ford got beaten in 76. By Jimmy Carter, but that's where Bob Dole was the VP pick, and then he kept running for president, wanting to be there. George Bush and Dole were beaten by Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan won the presidency, got the nomination in 1980, and then when George Bush was picked over Dole to be the vice president, then Dole was relegated toward the back of the party, or not in the top leadership, and he rose up to be the majority leader in the United States Senate. And then after President Bush was defeated by Clinton, of course, Bob Dole ran in 1996 against Clinton. So he made it his party's nomination. But they had that respect. Both of them were World War II veterans and dedicated their lives to serving America in public service. And there he was, he in that brief second, saluting Commander-in-Chief. And it was really an amazing moment. Out of all the things said, all the images, amazing images, any state funeral for a former president, but that image of Bob Dole mustering the strength to salute the casket, the flag-draped casket of former President George H.W. Bush. That was an amazing thing. I hope you go see that if you hadn't been able to. One thing before we close out the show, I do have a couple of scriptures that I Lauren Bush, Lauren, Ashley Walker Bush, the two granddaughters, spoke out of Book of Isaiah, I believe. But I'm going to finish the show with that. Before I do, the things that I can remember, because when President Bush won in 1988, I had just gotten out of dental school. I'd just been practicing some and starting trying to build a business. And that recession came along in 91. There was this savings loan bust, and people don't know that didn't live through that, don't remember it, but we had a recession, and that's when President Bush broke his pledge and raised taxes to, again, supply what the Democrats wanted to keep funding the government. And that's where I can remember the disappointment that when he raised taxes, and it just took the wind out of the Republican Party, the conservatives who wanted to support him. And then some of these people went off to vote for Ross Perot. Some of them just didn't get fired up, but it allowed Bill Clinton to win in 1992. And that was the year when 1992 you had a World War II veteran, and President Bush had Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton had some amazing intellect, but he brought in some things with him that have been with our country since that I don't know it's been that good. Some, all these liberal doctrines that came in with the Clinton administration and the people he appointed is still knocking away at the foundations that this country is built on. Going back to the book that I've talked about before, that you can get at www.docholiday.org or on the front page here, but it's called Bedrock Truths. And I really believe 1992, when Bill Clinton won, is when these bedrock truths started being eroded away, being hammered and chiseled away by the leftist. That gave them the momentum. And since then, especially with the election of Barack Obama and 8 years under Obama, and the extreme left really pushing our country away from these foundational principles. So get that book if you haven't got it, and you read about it there. But those are the biggest thing I remember, is the transition of what we looked at in the leader with President George H.W. Bush, and then what we got with Bill Clinton, the love affair the left wing had with the Clintons, height of hypocrisy in so many areas. I'll just leave it like that on this show. Let's say goodbye to former President George H.W. Bush. I'm going to let you listen to scripture from his granddaughters.
A reading from the prophet Isaiah. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and a thick darkness the peoples. But the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look around. They all gather together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from far away, and your daughters shall be carried on their nurses' arms. Then you shall see and be radiant. Your heart shall thrill and rejoice, because the abundance of the sea shall be brought to you, and the wealth of the nations shall come to you. Violence shall no more be heard in your land, devastation or destruction within your borders. You shall call your walls salvation and your gates praise. The sun shall no longer be your light by day, nor for brightness shall the moon give light to you by night. But the Lord will be your everlasting light, and your God will be your glory. Your sun shall no more go down, or your moon withdraw itself. For the Lord will be your everlasting light, and your days of mourning shall be ended. The word of the Lord.
And with that, we'll say goodbye with a final salute to President George H.W. Bush. We'll be back next week for another session, another round of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. See you then.
Thanks for joining us today, and remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Bedrock Truths, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen, or visit docholliday.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.